What's your name?
Cass.
You're young to be crewing a gunship, Cass.
I wanted to see the universe. Is it always like this?
If you're lucky.
Don't worry, it's bigger on the inside.
What did you say? Bigger on the inside, is that what you said?
Yes, come on, you'll love it.
Is this a TARDIS?
Yes, but you'll be perfectly safe, I promise you.
Don't touch me!
I'm not part of the war. I swear to you, I never was.
You're a Time Lord.
Yes, I'm a Time Lord, but I'm one of the nice ones.
Get away from me!
Oh, look on the bright side, I'm not a Dalek.
Who can tell the difference anymore?
Cass!
I'm the Doctor, by the way.
You're listening to Pieces of Eight, the Doctor Who podcast that doesn't think the Time Lords are just as bad as the Daleks. We're back again as we look to explore those sections of the Doctor Who universe that feature the incarnation of the Time Lord, as played by Paul McGann. And yes, we would go with him and not lock the doors. I'm Rebecca Chapman.
And I'm Kenny Smith, and you join us as we resume on our quest to feature the Eighth Doctor's exploits, whether on screen, in books, novellas, full-cast audios, short stories, comics, animations, talking books, magazines, crash spaceships, magical potions, and golden goblets.
See, if I didn't know what we were talking about today, I'd think that you were making that up.
I know, but that's why people listening to this are devotees of the Eighth Doctor, so every single reference we make here should be recognised within seconds, and we haven't even done the Zagreus rhyme.
This is true, we have not.
No. Zagreus sits inside your head, Zagreus lives among the dead, Zagreus sees you in your bed, and eats you when you're sleeping.
Damn, I just got Merlin looking at me terrified round the corner now.
Oh, I've scared your cat. That's not good.
You have. You scared my cat.
Zagreus. So, at the end of days, Zagreus lies a lot of ways. Zagreus comes when time's amaze and all of history's weeping. I can't remember the rest of them, but that's just two off the top of my head. So.
Well, who have we got joining us this week? It's someone we should hate because as a result of her actions not going with the Doctor and his TARDIS, she actually caused the end of this amazing incarnation. He passed on. This Time Lord was no more. He had ceased to be. He expired and went to meet his maker. He was a stiff, bereft of life. He rested in peace. Sort of. He was pushing up the daisies. His metabolic processes were history. He was off the twig. He kicked the bucket. He shuffled off his mortal coil, ran down the curtain, joined the bleeding choir invisible. This is an ex-Time Lord.
Calm down, Becca. He's not a parrot. Anyway, this episode, we're speaking to another Scottish person about the Night of the Doctor. We've already had Stephen Moffat, briefly, from a pre-recorded interview, not a new exclusive one, but who knows, we might get that one day. And Denise Paul, the producer, who joined us in the first episode of this run. So now we're going to meet Emma Campbell-Jones. And you would love Rebecca because not only is she a fantastic actress and very funny, she's one of us. She's a cat lover. And her poor cat boy has recently needed surgery, but he's on the mend. I found out he's put on a kilo in the last few weeks. And listeners, if you want to find her on Instagram or Twitter, you can help make a donation to pay for Boy's recent surgery, which has got him back on his feet, and he's a lovely, lovely little fella.
I guess we can kind of forgive her for killing the Eighth Doctor then if she loves cats.
Well, yes, I suppose we're talking here about Emma we love, but Cass we're not so keen on. Anyway, let's meet this week's guest.
Hello, I'm Emma Campbell-Jones. I played Cass in Night of the Doctor.
I have to say, Night of the Doctor, a very Scottish production, given that it was written by a Scotsman, it features a Scots actress, and produced by a Scots woman as well, with the wonderful Denise Paul.
That's right, I know. Well, we were kind of like Team Taggart, really. Denise was working with Marcus up on Taggart, and it just seemed that quite a few of the actors that Mark and Denise, were working with on Taggart, ended up making their way down into Doctor Who when Marcus was producing, which was a lovely, happy thing to have happened. I was delighted about that. It was really, really great. Although Marcus and I have a kind of running joke that whenever he casts me in anything or brings me in for stuff, I usually end up getting the dreaded deaded. specialize in death and brevity when it comes to Marcus. Blinking, you miss me. Oh, she's dead again. Oh, dear. Oh, well.
Oh, my God. So as we were saying before we started that you're an Edinburgh girl. So what got your interest in acting? What sort of piqued that, and where did you go on to study?
Well, I went to study at Central School of Speech and Drama, which is now the Royal School of Central Speech and Drama, apparently, in Swiss Cottage, which is not far from where I am in Camden. What started me off with my love of acting? It was kind of a combination of things. I'd say my dad and my stepdad both got me interested in acting, because dad, whenever I came down to stay with him in London, we would always go to musicals and plays and things. He had a real keen interest in taking me to the theatre, which I absolutely loved. Also used to, because I was a little bit shy, kind of still am a little bit for an actor, I'm fairly shy actually. He used to kind of nudge me off to the Anna Scher Theatre School in Ealing with a lot of very kind of stagey kids, and I was just this little tiny Scottish person being like, oh, I don't know. And then I sort of, slowly but surely, they kind of helped bring me out Michelle a little bit, you know. And my stepdad and I used to watch loads of old movies together. I was always completely confused about why all my school friends had never heard of Clark Gable and Doris Day and Julie Andrews. I was like, what? How can you've not heard of these people? They're like amazing. And, you know, my kind of diet of old movies was really quite something when I was just, you know, quite a young age. I've actually got a nice little story. I was with my stepdad in the Beverly Hills Hotel. He'd taken us there for lunch when we were visiting over in LA. And I had watched only, I think, 2 weeks before, The Treasure of Sierra Madre with my stepdad. I was like a proper old film buff. I was well into it. And sat a wee way away from us was John Huston, the director, Angelica Huston, and Jack Nicholson, and Walter Huston as well, I believe. And so I didn't know what John Huston looked like, but my stepdad Bob nudged me and said, that's the director of the movie you watched a couple of weeks ago. And I already knew what Angelica Huston and Jack Nicholson looked like from various different movies. But I was kind of sent up because I was small and fairly sweet at the time, you know, kind of better than them kind of bounding up asking for autographs. And I kind of tentatively went up and with a piece of paper and, you know, and kind of said, oh, I'd love to have your autographs, please. And Jack Nicholson sort of lowered his specs at me and kind of went, wow, what a beauty. And I definitely remember like my face flushing up. And I've got that being the first memory of any fella ever making me blush, you know, which was kind of funny. And then they signed it, Jack Nicholson and Angelica Huston. But I remember looking quite disappointed and pushing a piece of paper along the table towards Jack Huston, going, no, I want yours too. I watched, you know, The Treasure of Sierra Madre. And he just roared with laughter. And he was like, how can a little girl like you watch one of my movies? And I was like, oh, no, I did. And I kind of went on and told him all the bits that I loved about it. But I think because we often used to live in fairly remote places that, you know, I would, you know, I have school friends and things, and but it was always a bit of a schlep to go and hang out with them, you know, like my nearest friend when we lived in Broadmeadows in the Borders was like about 6 miles away by bike. And so I spent a lot of time watching old movies on Betamax and VHS, like again and again, sort of a threadbare. So I kind of got really into the stories of others, and just it kind of lit a fire in my imagination. And it just seemed like a natural course of action for me to do that, because I ended up going to an English boarding school. I got sort of slightly duped into that by my parents. It's like, yeah, you just have to sit the exam for the scholarship. You don't have to go or anything. And then when I got it, I was like, they were like, you have to go now because you got it. And I went, that wasn't part of the deal. That was not part of the deal. So it's kind of, yeah, parceled off. But they had an amazing theatre at Christ Hospital, really beautiful. It's kind of wooden, red, tiered, a bit like the Globe, actually, in the structure of it. And they put a lot of energy and effort into their, you know, dramatic element at school. And I was in tons of plays, and it just sort of naturally followed suit that I'd go on and be an actor, you know.
Yeah.
Which my dad was delighted about. He always wanted to be an actor.
That's so lovely. when you get a job that makes your parents happy, then that's always a good thing.
Well, his aunt, Diana Churchill, was a stage and screen actress. She was in Under the Sycamore Tree in the West End with Alec Guinness. She was played a lot opposite him. He actually did her eulogy at her funeral that I was at with Dad. And she also was in things like, I think it was Ice Cold in Alex or something with Sir John Mills. I think she played his wife. And I mean, she was so charming. I used to go visit her with Dad at Denville Hall. She was lovely. So I think when I became an actor, Dad was sort of, because he always admired his aunt so much that, you know, I think he sort of imagined that I'd go off and have a similarly illustrious career as his aunt. But, you know, I've taken sort of a different journey, but similar-ish, but not quite as amazing as hers.
That's amazing. So you mentioned, obviously, Taggart earlier on. So maybe give us a few of your other highlights of your career.
I loved doing Outlander. I really loved that. I loved it because I loved the part. I thought she was a beautifully written character. And because I grew up at school in Edinburgh learning about Jacobite history. So, you know, that it was good to actually kind of breathe life into the people that I had learned about when I was a kid. You know, we all learned about Bonnie Prince Charlie and his escape and all that. So that was very much kind of seeded in the beginnings of my learning about my heritage. So it was really lovely to be able to actually embody, you know, not that Mary McNabb is a real person, but that really happened to those people. They really were, you know, starved by the English. They, you know, they took over their farms and, you know, it was difficult after they won. It was that period of time when, you know, Jamie's hiding in a cave and stuff, a couple of years. And it's very, very, it was a very lean and difficult time for the Scots then. So because it's in the book, it mentions that Mary's, you know, fine boned and sort of, they would have been slightly starved. So I kind of like tried to lose as much weight as I possibly could for that part, just because I felt like she's the kind of woman who'd probably give her as much of her rations as possible to her growing teenage son. Mm-hmm. So I wanted her to look like she'd had a hard life cleaning and scrubbing because she was a housekeeper, but just had that slightly pinched kind of look to her. But it was some lovely stuff that we did on that. And really, there were lovely actors and the crew were just lovely as well. I have a particular fondness for Scottish crews anyway, but Glaswegians are hilarious because they're just no nonsense, you know. They're just very funny, no nonsense, and I loved it a lot. And also I get to hang out with my mum. Every time I do a Scottish production, I get to stay with my mum, which just makes me all happy because she's fab, and she's like 300 odd miles away from me, so it's nice to be able to actually see her day in, day out, you know.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I suppose of course, the big thing about Outlander is that it was inspired by Doctor Who, an episode that Diana Gabaldon had seen with Fraser Hines.
That's right. Fraser's character, Jamie, sort of lit a fire in the imagination of Diana Gabaldon and created this whole character around him, which I kind of love, you know. So it's nice that there's that link there. Really nice.
Yeah.
And Fraser's been in it as well, I gather.
Yes.
I guess
he's done
more
a couple
recently.
Of episodes.
Uh-huh. But I think he did something reasonably recently with them again too, I think, unless I've got it wrong. He posted something on Facebook with, I think he might have done a little bit of extra something in there. And not that I want to do any spoilers or anything. I hope I didn't get in trouble by sharing that. You've got to be careful with these things.
Absolutely, yeah. So from one time travelling person to another, so had you been much of a Doctor Who fan before you were cast?
Well, I was in Doctor Who before as Dr. Kent with Matt Smith's Doctor in an episode called The Wedding of River Song in the Pyramid. And I was Alex Kingston's kind of right-hand woman, military physicist kind of person with the eye patch that I drive. And I was the first one to get killed by the Silence. So I kind of was already familiar with the Doctor Who world and loved it. I had so much fun on that job. I just absolutely loved it. I couldn't wait. I was just thinking, oh, I hope they can find a way for me to come back. And I was thinking maybe as a monster, because then they wouldn't recognize me if they put stuff in my face, you know. And I was just sort of imagining how I might be able to come back in some way. And then I didn't imagine that I'd get offered a cast. it was an offer, and it was just something that they slightly downplayed actually when the email came in, the offer came in. It was like, well, it's not going to be part of the main thing. It will be a kind of online thing, and it just sort of sounded fairly low key. I was like, I don't mind. I'm just really happy because, you know, it's Doctor Who, and I love it. I love it. And I did watch a bit of, you know, when I was growing up, Tom Baker and Peter Davison were kind of my doctors when I was growing up. And I was definitely a fan of that. So a little bit of Sylves, but I think I was kind of like onto other things, I think maybe by the time Sylve came around. But I remember him. Sylvester actually played my dad, or rather I played his daughter, in my first ever professional job out of drama school. He played Mr. Bennet and I played Lizzie Bennet in a touring production of Pride and Prejudice, which was, less than a month after I graduated from Central.
Wow.
And we still have a really close bond. Every time he sees me, he calls me daughter, you know, which I really love. He's just the best, himself.
He's wonderful.
The best. Yeah. But yeah, basically, I was just really delighted. And, oh, that's right. They were, Alice sent an email through after I'd already said yes. And then there was something ominous about the way that it said one of the doctors. And I was like, ooh. One of the doctors, so it could be anyone, because I just sort of assumed it would be with Matt again or something. And then it was like, drum roll please, and then there were all these chevrons down, and I had to scroll right down to the bottom of the email, and it has Paul McGann in caps lock, and I was delighted because I was a big Withnell and I fan, and I actually campaigned for Central Library to have a copy of Withnell and I in their library. I was like, how can you not have Withnell and I in the library? It's about Central students, written by an ex-Central student. You've got to have it in there. And then sure enough, they got it in. And I think not that much long after, because at the time I had a wee part-time job, at Hope, you know, just selling programs and ice creams and stuff at the Hampstead Theatre, which was across the road while I was, you know, doing my third year. And he came in to watch a play, and I sort of spun around, and I got so shocked to see him that I dropped all of my programs, and they sort of fanned out on the floor, which I told him when I first started working with him, and I told him that story. I was like, yeah, I got so starstruck. I never get starstruck by anyone, but I did when I met him first. I just literally dropped all my programs all over the floor.
Of course, he's
but, yeah.
He's a huge classic film buff as well, which I discovered because he was up in Bowness earlier this year for the Bowness Silent Film Festival when I got a chance to meet him and had a wee chat with him. And incredible, just he knows so much about the subject matter. He's very, very well read. When he's into something, he's really into it, whether it's football, the history of war, or classic film. Brilliant.
He is a fascinating dude, and funny, and nice. It's like, I just, it's so nice getting to hang out with him. It's really nice. I love getting to work with him. And also when I see him at conventions and stuff, I just feel really comfy around him. He's just, and he has a lot of time for everybody as well, you know, equally so, you know, he's lots of time for everybody on set, everybody. He's just a really, like, what you see is what you get kind of a guy, which is always nice, I find.
I suppose doing Knight, the fact that effectively you killed Doctor Who, which your character, not you personally.
That's what Sylve said. Sylve went around at all conventions, I gather, saying, she killed Doctor Who. It's like, shh, stop saying that, Sylvester. But yeah, well, I mean, you know, he was, I suppose, had they got into the TARDIS earlier, things might have gone a little better than they did, you know. But in her defence, she had just experienced the Time War, and she thought he was he is a Time Lord, and she thought he was a baddie. So, I don't know. It's like, why would she get into a small box with a baddie? Right?
That's
it's like
true.
It's like hurtling through space, certain death in a fiery blaze, or get into a box with a baddie, potentially much, much worse outcome. So I can... And it was also kind of a split decision thing, you know. I quite like, though, that she didn't, because it kind of gives an indication of just how awful the Time War was, and how awful and evil and terrible the other Time Lords were. You know what I mean? For her to kind of go, no, thanks, I think I'll choose death instead, this way, it kind of gives you a fairly strong indication of just how heinous and nefarious they were.
Yeah. It's a very clever piece, Night of the Doctor, because there's just so much in there just layered in, what, 6.5, 7 minutes. And the fact that you're involved for about half of that, it must be quite, from an acting or an actor's point of view, that there's so much interest in it. This short piece of work that you did that was literally a couple of days' work. But here you go, you get people like me who are fascinated to know how it all came about.
Just Stephen Moffat wrote an amazing script. He packed it all in. He's really good at writing, as you all know. And we just got the script and flew with it. It was fairly late on. I seem to remember it was only a few days before. And there was a lot of secrecy in it. Paul's doctor was referred to as Omega in the schedule. And every time he stepped out of his trailer, they had a big huge golf umbrella to kind of escort him, which was more about just shielding him from the rain. It was about like making sure he was not visible at all. It was like they really took it seriously, and bless them for doing so, because I think we managed to keep the secret really well kept until right at the last minute. And then I don't know, somebody apparently got hold of it online about a week before it was due to air. And anyway, is what it is, you know. Yeah. So we had to come out, it had to be released a little bit early. Yeah, we were kind of blessed with that snappy little punchy brilliance of a script. And and also as an actor, you don't need great swathes of text in order to tell a story. If the story's already written well, the work's kind of already done. You just have to breathe life into it and hope that your interpretation matches what was, you know, in the ether of the imagination of the writer. And yeah. So that's what we did. We tried to do it justice, you know.
Oh, it's fantastic, because I think I've lost count the number of times I've watched it, because when the day it dropped, because I'd got wind that it was coming, and it dropped on Paul's birthday that year. And then I just remember watching it with two of my friends from work who were both Doctor Who fans, because I was like, it's here, Night of the Doctor. And we watched it, and it was just jaws dropping. It's like, yeah, that's the effect that everybody was looking for. And it was just such a lovely feeling. But of course, it's not the only Doctor Who you've done. You've done TV, but you've done some Big Finish with Tom Baker, and more recently in War Doctor Begins.
Yeah, that's right. That was really fun, super fun. And Jonathan Carley, my God, he really does a good John Hurt, doesn't he?
It's scary. Jonathan's brilliant. He's such a lovely, unassuming man, and just, wow. He opens his mouth, that voice comes out.
I know.
How?
I know, so good. He tells the story that apparently he posted something on YouTube of him doing a John Hurt impersonation, and he sent it in, or it was seen, or I'm not entirely sure how that went down, but got the job from that, which is just amazing. Those are the kind of stuff that dreams are made of, right? Fairy tales and things.
Totally. I remember seeing it on Twitter and dropping Nick Briggs, the exec producer, a wee line just to say, have you heard this guy? And he's like, oh yes, he's very much on our radar. And I'm not surprised.
Oh wow.
That's amazing. It's really good. It's absolutely.
And Tom, I didn't actually meet because you know he does his stuff from home a lot of the time down in Kent. And I would have loved to have met him. I've heard lots of amazing tales about Tom. I keep friends of mine sort of send through really hilarious. There was one in particular, really hilarious recording of Tom doing an advert for something, but it just had me crying with laughter from start to
Symphony.
Finish.
Symphony.
Just so good. Yes, that was it, Symphony. That's it. It's so hilarious. I just thought, I love this guy. He's brilliant. He's so good. Yeah, really, really brilliant. Yeah, they were, I love doing Big Finish stuff. I really love it. I love doing voice acting. I love that we can just kind of, that our imagination, what we're seeing in our mind's eye, as well as getting to play with the other actors that we're sort of seeing in the room with us, or maybe online, some of them are, and, you know, translates into this thing that's, it's kind of all the more important, actually, you know, to really hold, you know, the picture of the world that is coming through in the script when you read it in your head, because that really translates when you hear it. If you lose that, the thread of what you're seeing, in your imagination. Well, maybe just as an actor, because, you know, all actors are hypercritical of their own stuff, right? But you can hear it. If you drop the ball for a second, you're like, I'm not sure I'm quite in the world. Can I stay on that jazz, you know? But yeah, it's really, I think I'm definitely also getting a lot more confident with it. I think when I did the first one, it was my first ever voice anything. So I'm kind of really much more relaxed and kind of playing with it more now that I get the opportunity to do more stuff with them. They're so nice as well. I just really like hanging out with them, you know? It's just fun. You get to meet lots of lovely other actors and stuff too, which is good.
Yeah. Well, fingers crossed there's some more in the future because, well, we know that cast may be gone, but there's still plenty of other parts out there that can be played.
Yes. True, which is the beauty of Big Finish and Timey-Wimey, right? You can just play with all kinds of alternative realities.
You've got the
which
lingo.
Which is always good.
Yeah, you've got the timey-wimey in there. You're very, very good.
That's what happens when you hang out with a Big Finish boss.
Yeah, it has that effect on you. But no, Emma, thank you so much for coming on and having a chat with us about all things Cass.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks very much.
So, are there any other Scottish people involved in the Night of the Doctor that you're going to find? Like the tea boy, the wardrobe assistant, that third rock on the left of the Sisterhood's cave?
That was McRocky. No. Well, do you know what? I bet if I put my mind to it, I could probably find one more person. But that's a thought. Then again, we are slowly but surely finding the Scottish people who've been involved in Doctor Who's Scottish adventures or Scottish themed adventures or Scottish related ones. One by one, we're getting there with it. Andrew Smith has done Big Finish stuff. Yeah, there's definitely going to be others. Let's find. No, because that makes me sound like I'm a mad Scottish nutter. And no, we're not going to go there. No, I think we'll just see if we can find another Night of the Doctor person and then we'll be happy. Well, I'll be happy. Emma was good, well, though.
Emma was good. She sounded amazing. If you've enjoyed this week's Pieces of Eighth, I suspect if Kaz was listening, she'd be appalled that we're celebrating a Time Lord. Anyway, if you've liked any episode that we've done, please do leave a review for us on iTunes, as it means more people can find our episodes, and it's always appreciated.
That's very true. We do like people picking up our numbers. And do you know, with our new twice-weekly format, we're getting great numbers within like the first 24 hours that we've not had since the Paul McGann episode. And so people seem to be enjoying this new format. But who knows, we may have a slightly different format again for season 5, but we'll find out about that in the near future. But the meantime, we'll be back next time with an exclusive interview with Gary Gillett. Now, Gary was the editor of Doctor Who magazine at the time the TV movie was made. And he was lucky enough to be flown across the Atlantic to Canada, to Vancouver, for the filming of the TV movie. And Gary was one of the few journalists who made that trip, and he'll be sharing his memories of that visit when we speak to him next week.
I can't wait. That sounds really exciting.
So until next time, I've been the very Scottish Kenny Smith.
And I've been the very, I don't know, Rebecca Chapman.
You have been very Rebecca Chapman today.
I have, it's true.
Brilliant. See you soon, Becca. See you soon, listeners.
See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.